accession number 10421, reel 21.
Mr. Leslie Thornton, Reel 21. We were talking about the composition of the company, Mr. Thornton. I'm intrigued by this role of one sniper in the company. What exactly was his responsibilities?
Well, he would be with company headquarters. He would not be with a platoon. He'd be with company headquarters, and if at any time, say, that a section or a platoon was held up, and for some reason or other, and they couldn't sort of get rid of it, then they would inform the company commander of this situation, and they would probably tell him they think there's somebody holed up in a certain place. And so I would say to the sniper, right, I'm going to take you around to 7th platoon and see what the position is. And I would take him round and ask them to show me what, and then try and locate this obstacle. And if you could, fair enough. Then I'd say, right, oh, because he'd have his telescope on his rifle, and with having a telescope on, he would see it better. So if he could dispose of this obstruction, if we like to call it, then he would carry on and do it. After that, he would go back, take him back to company headquarters again.
Do you recall the name of any of your snipers?
Yes, I know one. The one I had was called Ratigan, a North Country lad, and we'll tell you a little bit about him later on in the thing. Probably not tonight, but later on, something happened to him. But that's the only one we had, of course.
Can I ask you what the role of the CSM is in the rifle company?
Well, he was responsible to the company commander, even in war, for the discipline of the company, responsible that the sections, platoons, had their ammunition. That's where I had my company runner, who, if it was possible, go around to 7 platoon, 8 platoon, 9 platoon, and see if the ammunition is all right. And I had my store of ammunition in a truck, if I could get it. Get at it, but the point was I had to make sure that they had enough ammunition to take with them to go into action, because it would be difficult to get it if they're already in action, because I couldn't have carried it. Now, to do that, you see, I had to make sure that I saw the RSM and said I want so many boxes of ammo, and I would issue it all out to every man. His platoon sergeant, it would be, his pouches would be full, and probably a bandolier round his neck, which meant he would probably have 100 or so rounds each man. That's a lot of ammunition to use in an action. You shouldn't normally run out. Any messages over the radio? If the company commander's not there to take, make sure you got to know about them. The general looking after the company. It was really an important job, even to make sure the officers were doing the job. I mean, I've been told before by a colonel, "Sergeant Major, you're responsible. Your company commander's not doing his job, and you are not seeing that he does it." So that's how important the sergeant major's job was. Right. I must tell you about after actions. Now, we did have quite a few deserters. This was probably after shelling, you could be shelled and dispersed. And you check and find each platoon and the report so many missing. And you wouldn't they wouldn't turn up. Now, that meant that when we were at rest, I spent my time with the platoon sergeants on court-martial verandas, having these chaps tried as deserters. They all got 3 years. I won't say there were dozens. This was only, I'd say, maybe two or three at a time. But, as I say, my time was spent giving evidence about what had happened and these people, these lads deserting. And
what kind of reasons were there for them deserting? There were there varied
frightened,
reasons?
Frightened. Only one reason. A man has had enough. And you believe me, if you're under shellfire and it's near your hand, you've got the lads that can't stand it. I mean, they're not entitled to blame, but then again, nobody can say that. If they've gone, they've deserted, and it's the charges. Whilst an active service, deserting His Majesty's forces, not going absent, deserting His Majesty's forces, in that he so and so deserted his platoon, so and so.
Was there some kind of organisation behind the fire zone which netted these people as they came back?
Oh yes, you had. There was a building. There was a building reserved in the back area when you probably went out to rest, and you'd have officers picked from different regiments. I can't tell you really how many officers were, but you had your presiding officer and a couple more listening to the chap's excuses and listening to the evidence, and then giving the punishment out. Which, as I say, was most of all, if the desertion was warranted, if it was proved, then it would be 3 years.
What I'm trying to say is, when they deserted, when they went away, how were they caught? Was there some kind of organisation? I'm thinking of military police, for example. Was anyone stationed back there waiting for them coming down?
No, they'd turn up again. They would turn up, you see, but actually, in theory, they had deserted. At the time when you were in the line, but they had nowhere to go except out of the firing line, and of course you probably when you came out of the line, they were all there waiting for you coming back, or two or three would be waiting for the company to come out of the line, and then that is when they were caught and tried. But as I say, I'm not going to say that this happened to hundreds of men. This happened to one or two in each action. If there was a host of them, then there'd be something wrong. There'd either be something wrong with the administrator of the battalion, or something wrong with the company commander, or something wrong with the sergeant major. That's another thing, you see. You had to be careful with your with your duties. Now, I also had to put sentries, even in the line. You had to have sentries on at night time, because you couldn't expect men to stay awake all night. They had to if they were fighting, but if they were in a sort of a trench or something like that, then they would have to go to sleep. And so you had to have your sentries on. And it was my duty to see that the company headquarters sentries were put on, and platoons, that would be the responsibility of the platoon commander. Anything, if when the rations came, the platoon commanders would have to detail men to go and collect them, because they would be dumped at a point behind the line, because the colour sergeant obviously couldn't get up with his truck. At the same time as he brought the rations, of course, that was my chance to have ammunition brought up as well, if it was needed. So that would be sent over on the wireless, that more ammunition is needed for C Company.
And holding a position in the line, was this material coming up during the day or at night?
could come up during the day, or the night.
It depends how.
Depended on the whether the enemy had an OP. Could see up the road where they're coming. If so, it would come at night time. If not, then they could come at day. I've known him because I've been down there during the day collecting the stuff with him, because I had to take my men down. There's another thing, you see, I didn't ask for volunteers to go with me. I said, you and you. And then the next day, I'd say, you and you. See, because if you ask for volunteers every time, you get the good lad who would always say, I'll come, sir. Eh? But there's one man that always went. That was me. Which made the men happy. They said, well, the sergeant major's gone. He goes every time. So there was no crib. And
what did the material come up in? What was it carried in?
Oh, it was carried in a 1,500 weight truck.
And the smaller receptacles, in action,
your water came up in jerry cans, 2 gallons. And your rations were in boxes, compo boxes, and mostly in tins with your tea, sugar, etc. In dry tea and dry sugar, dry milk in your little flat tins, and then issued out one tin per man for his meal. Now we were ready to make an attack on a group of buildings on this little hill, and the platoons were of course spread out in our particular formations to attack these places. Now we got there without a lot of trouble, but when we got in, they give us hell. Now they must have had an OP on a hill further up and could see. And we got in. Now, with us, we had the gunner OP. That's our own artillery gunner, who was our support artillery. And then they started to give us hell. They started to knock the building down bit by bit. Of course, the company headquarters were the only ones that were in the building. The platoons were outside, sort of in open ground, or behind little hummocks, whatever they had to get behind. And they started to knock this building down bit by bit. The OP gunner was wounded with shell fire. He was dying. The stretcher bearer went to him, and he tied something right round his waist. And I heard the officer say, I'm choking. Obviously, he was dying. One of my corporals came in, shot through the foot. He was in the corner moaning, and the company commander was saying, for goodness sake, try and keep him quiet. Then Pat Casey got on the wireless to the CO and said, somebody's got to do something about this. He said, we have been absolutely cut to bits, bit by bit, the shell fire. So anyhow, he must have got through, and there was counter battery. We heard it. It was our own gun firing over the top of us, clearing the enemy out. So that situation cleared up, and we started then to advance over this ground. I had my company headquarters following me, the major, and the platoons on each side. And as I went up, there was a German soldier sitting in a pool of water off the path, like this. Obviously, he was very badly wounded, and I was going over to him. And the major said, don't, Sam, major, don't go. Leave him. So I had to leave him. And we carried on advancing, and then we were counterattacked. Well, there were too much for us, so we had to get back quickly. And as we went back, we heard this noise going. It was a funny noise, and we knew what it was. It was the Nebelwerfers winding up. They were electrically controlled six-barreled mortars, and they were horrors. And they caught us in the middle of this open ground. Well, we were all flat on our faces in a ditch full of water. And they stopped, of course, after a good... see, when you get a six-barrel mortar, you get a battery of six-barrel mortars, then it's had let loose. And we got up again. I looked over. The German soldier had gone. He'd been blown to pieces by his own mortars. And we got back into this building again, and completely started to reorganise ourselves. But it was really a sticky time. You see, when you take a place, you don't see many Germans. You don't see your enemy a lot. You only see them when they're running away. So you can't say how many you've killed. I mean, your shell fire killed a lot of... I should say, accounts for most of your casualties in a war like that. So we had to start all over again.
Can I just ask you about what date is this?
It's still in August. I can't really... No. The dates now have gone past me, really. This is going to be from August now until February time.
Can you describe the terrain that this action took place in? What kind of terrain were you in?
Oh, yeah, this was mountainous, hilly. It was part of the worst part. See, we'd been moved over to the right side, the 8th Army part of Italy, which is the backbone, and so you come back to your hilly country again. And obviously your tanks couldn't do anything about it until we had got some of the key points of the higher hills.
And the Germans were on the top?
They were on top, or they were down below, waiting for us to come up, whatever. You see, what you've not got to forget now is that the Germans were on the run. They would make a good stand, they were on, and don't forget, Rome, Cassino had fallen, and Rome had fallen. That's how high we were up, you see, then. We knew that they were on the run, their winter line had gone. And the Gothic line, now we were gradually getting through the Gothic line, which they thought would finish the Italian campaign off.
Can we just remain with this attack a little bit longer? How can you recall how your attack was organised and what way that the attack went in?
Well, it's difficult to explain, really. It was only a case of your platoons being in a certain place and the company commander controlling with his wireless, controlling his platoon commanders on either side. I mean, don't forget, a platoon, you've only got 100 men, and they're not spread over a very great area, so they were quite near hand. The thing about one particular part, we were after we left this place, the Germans had gone, and then it was dark then, and we carried on. And we went through burning houses, burning grass, and we really didn't know where we were going. Maps, they were useless at that time. Only the company commander had a map, and so we had to rely on sense of direction and just watch our step. It's really a... They talk about information. You couldn't get a lot of information in an attack. Either you saw them being, you felt men being mowed down, and you knew where it was going. That's the only way you know where they were. And so you had to then decide what you were going to do, whether you're going to retreat and go around another way, or whether you're going to advance into them.
How was your retreat? Was it an organised retreat when you had to pull back when you were...
No, it wasn't really. It wasn't, because we were caught unawares. It was organised at the point that the major says, right, get back. Get the men back. Because he knew that we would have got slaughtered. That is the point of a good officer, who knows. He doesn't go pig-headed in a place with his pistol waving and say, right, get at him. It's not done.
Who was the major?
That's Casey, the school teacher from Darrow.
Now, the counter-attacking force, do you have any idea who they were? What element of the German army?
I think they were part of a panzer troops.
Did they have tanks with them when they counterattacked?
No, they were just the men. But what did us was the mortars. We couldn't do anything with a load of mortar bombs exploding all over the place.
Coming back fast like that, mm-hmm. Was there any danger under those circumstances with these dreadful mortar weapons of a panic setting in if you were moving back so quickly?
Oh, there could be. But fortunately, that time there wasn't. The only case of the corporal being shot, and the officer of the artillery being more or less killed. I don't think we had any other casualties, which I thought was very, very lucky indeed.
So then again, you came back, and then what?
Then we carried on. They'd gone. See, they only had. It was a spasm of the Germans, you see. But it's just a case of, well, we'll give them, try and see if we can knock any of them off. And then they must have retreated. Because that's what they did, you see. They had a certain amount of ground. And then they would go back to a firm line and wait then for us coming again. But anyhow, we carried on and... say through these burning buildings and the company guys, are we all right, Sam? Are they there? We've got them all in. I said, I can't see so and so. And of course, I said, I'll have to go and find them. So I had to go and find to see if the platoons were okay. Now, we came then to a ditch, a long ditch, full of water. And just at that time, we got caught again with shell fire. Now, this is what happened. We were lying, all of us, platoons as well, lying in this ditch, up to there, just lying up to there in water.
To the chest.
Up to the chest in water, with our heads down, of course, and we were shelling like mad. Now, I had, the major said, you better check our major again, there's 7 platoon there. And I had to get up, run along the ditch. Are you there, sir? So, 7 platoon, yes? Check on the others. And say, okay, we're all right, we've got them all here. And then wait till things quieten down and off again. But, it's very difficult to explain the situation that we're in.
How were the men standing up to it, can you recall?
Well, it was dark, you don't know, you can't tell. we hadn't lost any up to now. Yeah. Surprisingly, we didn't lose a lot of men in these particular actions, our company. I don't know why, but there wasn't a lot killed. There could have been, but probably we were lucky. I mean, I could have been killed at one particular time. The bullets hit the wall by the side of me. They appeared to come from the back of me at this particular time. So I soon got down out of the road. You know, when they're coming from the back, you wonder where they're coming from. But you don't know. They could have come from the side and hit the wall, because when a bullet hits the wall, you don't know whether it's come straight forward or it's come from the side. We got up again and we carried on and we were advancing all this time and we got to this other house and the major said, right, he had his little torch then. He said, we've got to be there. He said, now, look, I'm going round. He said, and he gave me a verbal order. Bring the men up this road, round to so-and-so, and I'll meet you on there. Which I had to take the company then. He went off with an officer to check on things, and I had to take the company round. I didn't really know what was going on myself. I had to take the company round and meet him at a certain place. I don't really know what happened after that. What the action was. As I say, things are now are happening so quick that you don't know. You can only pick out the little things that would outstand in your mind. I mean, all the time there was something happening, but as I say, it's a long time ago, and you get Well, you get confused now of what was happening. I think...
when you reached this objective, did you dig in there? Was this where you were supposed
to
be going?
No, we never dug in. No, we never dug in.
So where did you find to do... when you did have a rest,
we
found?
We always tried to find a house of some Egyptian. There's plenty about in Italy, these old houses and things like that. Mostly we found them. But if you couldn't, then you just have to and there wasn't much digging in. We were advancing. The Germans would have been doing the digging in, and we would carry on and hole up wherever we could. I remember just after this, we were going to attack another place, and I was told to take company headquarters to this area. And the major said, and get them bedded down, it was the middle of the night, because we weren't going to do it until to get them bedded down, for the night. We're all dog tired by then, and I got into this cottage thing, and just a stone floor, and I lay down, steel helmet on, and there was this big rock there, and I couldn't get myself comfortable. So I pulled the rock up, and underneath were about six great big black clocks. So I put the rock down on top of them and got down to it again. They didn't worry me. I just covered them up and got down to till the next morning, and got my company headquarters down, except one man, just keep an eye on them. There weren't any particular Germans at that time, because the Germans had gone.
You had guards, you know, a guard post.
Oh yes, you always had. Yes, you always had a guard. Well, you couldn't just let everybody go to sleep without making sure that they're going to be safe and wakened up if anything happened.
If and when your company commander had his operational orders, and presumably he got his. He's left his platoon commanders together. Were you in that kind of briefing with them? Was there any briefing about any given attack that might?
Well, I would be standing there, and the signal would be there with his wireless set on his back, and the company commander would have the handset getting his orders from the CO, or the CO would be phoned to him, and I would be there and listen probably to what he was saying to the CO, try and get as much information as I could. I remember one time I was in with him. We just got into this building. We'd had to crawl along a trench. We were caught in crossfire. We couldn't lift our heads up. And we had to turn round in that trench. It was hardly wide enough to turn. We had to turn round in that trench and keep our heads down and crawl back again to get into this house. We got in and found one of our wounded inside, and the major said, the CO got in and said, I want you to get that other building. And the major said to him, if you want me to get that bloody building, you come up and get it yourself. He said, I want smoke bombs down now. And so that was one time when the major was in command of his troop, and he told the CO just what the position was. So anyhow, it was we did get the 3-inch mortars smokes down to cover our advance to the next obstacle.
And the communication between your own company commander and his platoon lieutenants was by wireless as well, was it?
Yes. Or if that wasn't possible, it's by runner. I would send my runner up